It's a pleasure to be here at a soils meeting. I'm a silviculturist by trade, so if I seem out of place, then you'll know why. This talk is an opportunity to tie together some different data sets, and I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators, Robert Slasek, Scott Holland, Stephen Schoenholtz, who's not here, Dave Peter, also not here. And we're going to talk about management implications of organic matter removal after harvesting coast Douglas fir. And this is about west side Douglas fir, so just west of the Cascades in this case. Also, really want to thank our collaborators and sponsors, including the companies. We had really three strong companies helping us out here, the universities, and then the agencies that supported us on this work. Now, we've already heard about the LTSP network, and I'm going to talk about three of the sites that we've been working on that are located. One of them, Matlock, is located on the Olympic Peninsula. A Fall River is the Washington Coast Range site. And then Malala is in the foothills of the Oregon Cascades. So these are all low elevation sites, fairly productive sites in general. The Matlock site is the one that's a little bit different. We picked these sites intentionally to differ from each other. It's in the glacial outwash, and so we saw some unique characteristics on that site, which prompted us to add another site recently. And this is a site we call the Dry Bed Creek Study Site, and we have a manipulation study there as well. Now, this is a short-term study, and it's just down the road from Matlock. So same types of soils. Glacial outwash, I'll talk about in just a minute. The reason we picked this site is it had that understory scotch broom that had been brought in during a salvage harvest in the late 90s after the 96 ice storm. That whole region has this problem, that the operators brought in scotch broom seed, and it's in most of the outwash soils there. And we looked for a site. We wanted that. Now, because we want to see how this responds. We also found out, Dave Peter, who's our ecologist on this study, found out this is a prairie colonization force. This is former prairie that's grown back, you know, a century ago or more. But because it's a prairie site, we think it's a drier site than Matlock. We don't have good data to support this yet. We're just a mile away from Matlock or so. But because it's got what were prairie edge trees present, we think this is a drier site that the Indians were able to burn more easily, because it didn't support really productive forests. Now, as I mentioned, these sites were picked to be different. The Fall River site really got the ball rolling in the Northwest LTSP work that was being done. It's an extremely deep soil. It has three times the mineral soil carbon as Matlock. Excuse me, two times Matlock. Malala's in the middle. But it has three times the nitrogen as Matlock. And as I mentioned, Dry Bed Creek is going to be almost identical to Matlock, same soil series. Now, another thing to notice is the water holding capacity is very different also. A Fall River has about three times the water holding capacity of Matlock. So you can see that we really set up a nice striking set of contrasts here. Now, I'm going to talk about two treatments that are common to this the entire study. I keep it very simple. When you're a forester, you have to kind of keep stuff simple so you can understand it. And I have light debris and I have heavy debris. Now, this is the same as whole tree harvesting, the light debris. And in this case, the logs, the tops, and most of the branches are removed during the harvest. Our estimates indicate that it's somewhere around 12 metric tons per hectare is what's retained in this treatment. That's the debris that's on the ground. In the heavy debris treatment, this is what has been referred to as bowl-only harvesting, and only the logs are removed, approximately twice that much, about 24 metric tons per hectare. So a striking difference. You can see this picture. There's a little bit of snow in there, but you still have some debris in the light debris treatment. Here, intentionally, we've got a lot of debris, a lot of tops. Now, the basis for this presentation was what I'm calling a vegetation-centric model of the effects of organic matter retention on forest productivity. This is a conceptual model that seems to fit the data that we're observing. When we do forest harvesting, these are the types of things that occur after the harvest. We have some level of organic matter manipulation, and manipulation may have been a better term to use there. Often vegetation control is applied in the form of herbicides. There's always some soil disturbance out there. And what happens is these all act through an intermediary, which is vegetation, competing vegetation, that they alter the abundance and species composition of that community. Now, then this vegetation controls the soil water and nutrients that those trees are eventually going to get. And further, the soils and the precipitation act to also moderate that soil water and nutrient that gets to the trees. So this is the model we were working from. The data seems to support it. And to give another further detail is at the Matlock site, where we had understory Scotch broom present, we were doing an LTSP study. We were not doing a vegetation-based study, as this model suggests. And yet we found that the treatments affected the community so strongly in terms of excluding Scotch broom for the heavy debris treatment that we thought we need to study this a little bit closer, and hence the Dry Bed Creek site went in soon after. Now, first I want to just talk about the effects on the soil nutrients. And we're not seeing strong effects, but this is some of the work that Rob Slasek did early on. And he noticed that basically after forest harvesting, all the elements are showing some level of accretion after forest harvesting. And we've seen other presentations today that talk about this. In the five-year accretions, which are shown here, we saw more nitrogen in the heavy debris treatment. There's more accretion of that. There is more carbon, but it wasn't statistically significant. Also, accretion of potassium and magnesium were higher where organic matter was retained. So we're seeing a pretty pronounced effect at year five, but at year 10, those results are not, the same trends are present, but they're not statistically significant. So we're concluding that it's really limited effects of organic matter retention on these nutrient pools. But we do see strong effects on microclimate, and we've had several good talks that have discussed this in some detail. We see increases in soil water and decreases in temperature. And these, after four growing seasons now at the Dry Bed Creek site, we can see distinct effects of the debris on soil water in terms of conserving the soil water. If you look at the green line, in that first year, there's a nice little gap there. That's how much additional water the debris reduced evaporation. There's more water in the soil. In year two, not so much, and it was kind of a brief growing season. Year three, we still see some difference between the two. And then in year four, we believe that vegetation has now taken up that extra water. So there's no additional water. But early on, we had three full years of what we're calling a mulching effect of the debris on top of the soil. Now, it's important to point out the sampling depths, because when we did the Matlock and Malala studies, we were sampling in a deeper depth. We were sampling 20 to 40 centimeter depth at those sites. And it was truly an LCSP study that we were doing. In this one, we wanted to go after this mulching effect because we thought it was prominent and it could affect the community. So this is really surficial soil water. It's in the top 20 centimeters or so of soil. Temperature also done at the surface. Now, temperature, you can see that with the heavy debris, it's cooler. Interesting how it's trending upward. I'm not sure what's going on there, but it's 2 to 3 degrees centigrade cooler under heavy debris. And that cooler temperature may be enough to actually affect the community as well. Now, we've heard a little bit about Fall River, and this is an early paper done in year three with the Douglas fir growth being related to soil water in these three treatments. And first of all, if you just look at the heavy debris with veg control compared to the light debris with veg control, there was a significant difference in year three. In other words, heavy debris, trees are growing slightly better. It was statistically significant. It was also present in the year five data. In the year 10 data, it was shrouded. We didn't really see it so much. But I'm going to get into that a little bit later in my talk. But we saw greater early growth in Douglas fir with organic matter retention, and it was believed to be because there's more superficial soil water from the mulching effects of the debris. But then when we looked at the community, and this was at Dry Bed Creek, we looked at the community, we saw big effects that I never expected to see. For example, under heavy debris, we have fewer exotic perennial grasses on this former prairie site. We have fewer perennial herbs or broadleaf herbs. We had more vines, more native. These are native vines. So that's what heavy debris treatment is causing, less of the herbaceous and more of the woody. In this case, it's native vines, and we think that these native vines are probably less competitive than grasses, particularly the exotic grasses. So you can already begin to see there's a community setup going on here, real different communities developing. Then when we've looked specifically at Scotch broom seedling regeneration using microplots and putting many of them out there, we see a six-fold difference in density. So here we've got the heavy debris treatment, somewhat less than one per square meter. That's still a lot of Scotch broom. But somewhat less than one per square meter. Up here is 5 per square meter in the light debris treatment. And this is statistically significant, these differences. So Scotch broom is just a horrid species. It's extremely competitive, very deeply rooted. It's actually fairly productive in terms of biomass production. What's going on here? We think that the shade of the debris was the initial cause why there's less broom recruitment, and the lower soil temperatures were enough to slow down the germination of the species. So this was our first indicator that the community had really changed. Then I started looking at the individual species responses. And at Dry Bed Creek, we have 3 years of vegetation data. The Scotch broom only got up to less than 1% in the 3 years. This year was the fourth year, and we had decided to delay our vegetation measurements. It just absolutely exploded. So I can tell you, broom is here to stay. It's a lot more than shown here. But through year three, we have that difference, definitely a difference. The heavy debris has less broom cover. But this is what was very intriguing to me, the vines. There's a trailing blackberry, Rubus orsinus, and there's a trailing snowberry that are doubling their cover in the heavy debris treatment. This was a bigger response than I expected. Basically, the debris is acting as habitat for vine species, and the result is that vegetation is overlaying the debris, resulting in even further reductions in light and soil temperature. Now, we haven't specifically measured these, but you can kind of see it with your eyes. You've got this dense community on top of the debris itself. So it's no surprise that we're kind of fostering a native community, which is kind of nice, versus that scraped off exotic perennial grasses, herbs, and that kind of stuff. So this is a fairly intriguing response that I have not seen reported elsewhere. You see some vegetation responses in the LTSP network, but it usually hasn't been an emphasis in the papers that there's a strong effect that could have, kind of lasting effects on the forest productivity. Now, what's interesting, then I started looking at the Matlock data to see what the longer-term changes in community structure have been. And we have data through year 10 now with the vegetation. And the broom, actually, we didn't want the broom in that study. We thought it was going to basically destroy the study, and it probably would have. At least it would have destroyed all the veg, the no-veg control plots would have been gone. So in year 4, we got Green Diamond to basically eradicate. We thought we eradicated it. We took it down pretty darn close to 0% in year 4. And it's just come back. This is when we were out there measuring 10-year growth on some of the plots. There's broom already coming back into the plantation. So at year 10, we've got somewhere around 9% broom cover with the light debris. A lot of this debris is gone. There's not very much debris there. But quite a bit less of it in the heavy debris. Now, I looked at these native species, slough and blackberry, same kind of response that we saw at Dry Bed Creek. A big difference in the community. This is not a vine, but this is a ground cover type shrub. Here's our blackberry again. Big difference in cover. That is a pronounced difference in community structure. So in the longer term, the scotch broom abundance is being reduced, not from the debris, but from the change in the plant community structure. Now let's talk about Douglas fir growth. Weyerhaeuser recently measured the 15-year response of Douglas fir at the Fall River site. And if you just compare these two treatments, this bowl only and this total tree, they're finding a 7% difference. This is an early difference that we saw being set up in year three. The data suggested it was there. I understand it's a small difference, but it's statistically significant. We think it's the same kind of thing. The bowl only had a mulching effect. The trees grew better. It's lasted all the way to year 15. What about at these other two sites? Well, as found at Fall River, the relative response is smaller on better sites. So Malala, while we do see that the heavy debris treatment has faster growing Douglas fir, this is not statistically significant. However, at Matlock, this is statistically significant. What's going on here? Survival. The heavy debris is increasing survival of Douglas fir. And the way I know this, we have some data on this, but I look at the Dry Bed Creek site. We had just one heck of a growing season in 2015, and we lost half of our trees. And there was maybe about a 7 or 8 percentage point difference in survival. Heavy debris having more survival than the light debris. But growth just continues to diverge. The heavy debris treatments, Douglas fir is growing much better than in the light debris. So on a drier site, the debris has more positive impacts. We're seeing higher survival when we have debris retention. These are moderate effects. They're not huge. But when you compound them with these big differences in growth, we can see that forest productivity is having a long-term change. It looks like this is going to carry on for a while. So in summary, if we look at this vegetation-centric idea, we can see how it plays out. First of all, that organic matter retention reduces light at the soil surface, reduces temperature, reduces evaporation as a mulching effect, and it definitely reduces the germination sites for scotch broom and grasses and forbs, that are these exotic, very aggressive competitors. That altered microclimate and habitat basically changed the community structure. We have more native vines, and we have fewer non-native species that are more competitive with Douglas fir. So in the end, we can say that organic matter retention appears to be benefiting these forests, but that the variation, they vary with site quality. On our better sites, it's kind of a small effect. It's often statistically significant. But on the poor or droughty sites like Matlock and Dry Bed Creek, it's a very pronounced effect of debris retention. Okay, that's all I have. Absolutely. That's exactly what I believe is going on. So that those early differences set up like the habitat of the debris, I never would have thought that would have really matter that much. Who cares about vines? But it seems like that's what set up this long-term push towards a kind of a native plant community. And it makes good sense to me because if you look at how Douglas fir ecosystems have evolved, they've evolved to single tree disturbances in general, the old growth forests. So they have this debris rain coming down all the time whenever there's a storm. And hence, you have this habitat being set up for vines and shrubs to grow on to. And that kind of keeps it in a kind of a dense understory community that kind of holds onto the site, maintains it. So I think these are the early microclimate responses result in changes in plant community structure. And that's what we're observing. If there weren't the invasives involved, I haven't thought about that. If the invasives weren't involved, I think you would have some natives that would step right in and act in the same way. And I think what happens is when we break that forest floor that we set up for the even the native grasses, that they would take the same role. It's just that these non-natives are even worse competitors than our natives. So I think that in general, this maintaining the forest floor, possibly retaining the debris, is a system that has a lot of merits for this particular ecosystem. I don't know if we can generalize it outside of the west side of the Pacific Northwest, but it does seem to fit in that whole system, really well.